Blog Talk Radio.
Just in time for his very own squeak. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio. Hi, hi. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with...
Okay, when the 12 is flashing forever, hit the hold button and then the timer button. Oh, it's Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here with...
trying to set the clock on your VCR or what?
I am. And it's even harder because I lost my remote.
Oh, no. Now you got to stand there. It's like time is standing still. And speaking of which, time will not be standing still. It'll be moving backwards tomorrow night. So once again, we're featuring stories about clocks and time and whatnot.
Clocks and time. Yep. And looking at Fogsbane in the chat room, all ready to go.
Yep.
His Fogsbane is flashing 12, 12, 12.
You know, I hear we've got a new to the channel show tonight. I heard
wow,
this somewhere.
Where'd you hear something like that?
I don't know. I heard it through the grapevine. Like about... 2 minutes ago.
Yeah,
appointment
show. Usually we steal from the Brits. Tonight the Brits steal from us. How's that?
Sure. Yep, Appointment with Fear is our program that's never been on Eerie House before. Plus we got Whistler and Let George Do It.
Yep. Get Bob Bailey in there one way or the other. Whether he's George or Johnny George, whichever way you want to look at it. We got
You don't have to call me Johnny, and you don't have to call me George, and you don't have to call me Jimmy, but you could call me CW. How are you? Welcome to the program. Well, she may not know it, but she's here.
Yeah, I think I hear her coming in here for landing.
Good evening and welcome, young lady. As she's tuning up her microphone, we'll hopefully get to hear the Whistler whistle.
Hello, hello.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, we heard some whistling there. Hello? Heard some whistling there.
It's the Whistler.
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Yes, we do.
Oh, fantastic. Hello, everyone. CW here. In a, albeit not timely fashion, not timely, but getting ready to spring ahead, fall back.
We are falling back this weekend, darn it.
I was going to say, if you do both, then you end up at the same time. That's really weird.
You're making my head spin.
Fall back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and even though Halloween is still in the rearview mirror as we wave bye-bye to it, there are people who are still celebrating Dia de Muertos, the Day of the Dead, continues.
Well, I disagree. There is no after Halloween. There is only before Halloween. There's only 362 days remaining. Until Halloween.
You're quite right. I digress.
Yes.
We've got to look on the bright side.
Only 362.
Only. Yeah. I don't know if I have enough time to get ready. 300 such days. It's such.
There'll be another time change between now and then, too.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
There, for some reason, Dale in Ohio. They are looking to make it all daylight savings time and get rid of the standard time. But you can't do that if the other states aren't going to do it, too.
Yeah, it gets confusing. You live in your own little bubble.
Which is bad, but not quite as bad as when Indiana had half of the state in Standard Time, and the other half was in Daylight Savings, yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was them.
Yeah.
There was
it
even
Indiana
one...
that parked
yeah.
us?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That was Indiana.
Oh, that's so...
And actually drew the line through
hilarious.
A town, and half the town was in one time zone, and the other half was in the other time zone. How they drew their line.
So basically, if you arrive to work late... I mean, can you be blamed for that? Because, see, listen, I'm in this time zone. Blame the government. It's not me. I got up on time. I came here on time, but I live in that time zone. I mean, that is the best excuse ever.
Yeah, I don't think you can use it all the time, but it's a nice try.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've had bosses that'll only fly once, maybe.
Give you points one day for originality.
There you go. And there are some companies who don't want their employees arriving too early. So if you arrive really early, you're seen as loitering on property. It says, well, what do you want me to do?
Well, if they come in too early,
I'm here on your time. I'm early. So what am I supposed to do? Just sit in the middle of the road?
Well, if you come too early, then you can catch the boss with the secretary, you know?
Yeah, that's
something
there.
Oh, yes. Oh, my. Can we say extortion?
Yeah, absolutely. About that little extra vacation day I wanted, boss.
Yeah. I didn't realize. Oh, your wife is such an attractive redhead. Oh, you mean? Oh, she's a blonde. I'm so sorry. I was wondering who that redhead was.
Yeah. Hi, Mrs. Smith. Didn't see you there. Yeah. And so it goes. But got a bunch of radio tonight.
Oh, we do have a whole lot of radio.
Your microphone is pinging a bit, dear. Well, she gets unpinged, we might as well jump right into our first program of the night.
Device, so
okay, where would you like to start tonight, Dale?
Let's let George do it. You know, when it comes to coming first, we should let George do it.
We should let George do it. Good old Bob Bailey.
Let George do it.
It is episode number 201. It comes to us from July 17th of 1950.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Eleven o'clock, another adventure of George Valentine.
Mr. Valentine. Estella, who's Mr. Valentine? Hey, book of the month, unglue yourself. I said, who's Mr.
How should I know? He's a man.
Just like that, she says it.
Oh, don't talk like a girl's college, Maggie.
This is your alma mater, dear, not mine. I don't know how you stand it. Oh, I don't mean it hasn't been nice this summer session, but For an aging school teacher like me.
I know. Give you a handy football team every time. You're like all the rest of the man-happies around this place.
I just wondered why I was coming here, that's all.
I don't know. Friend of my uncle's, I guess. Be here this morning. And Valentine, somebody named Miss Brooks. I don't know, just coming.
I thought you had a class this morning.
Educational Psych 110.
Oh, I don't know how you stand all that garbage. Leave your mind alone, I say. Your mind's for wearing hats on, not hocus pocus and... Psychology 110. Hey, that's Ferris, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the teeth. Seen my scarf anywhere?
Estella, why don't you tell me what goes with him and that blonde drawl down the hall?
Not interested. Who cares? Women never talk about
it. Oh,
anything.
I know you can't stand him, but you know, don't you? The girls always tell you things. And somebody said they go horseback riding together, and he's married, too. Did you know that? I mean, Vicky the blonde was an undergraduate here herself, wasn't she? So you ought to know. What's the big secret, anyway? What's with this guy, Ferris? What's so mysterious
Maggie,
about him?
What time is it?
Hmm? Oh, 11 o'clock. Where are you going?
11 o'clock.
Well, aren't you going to wait for Mr. Valentine?
I must go someplace.
Well, hey, at least take your books for you. 11:30. Estella, what's the matter with you?
I don't want to see Mr. Valentine. There's too much to do. I'm not going to class.
What? Oh, listen, you never missed a class in your life. Estella!
Let go of me.
But you look sick. Oh, I always said you worked too hard.
I promised her I wouldn't tell. I promised the
you
other...
Honey, wait a minute.
No. No, I'm going. I have to go. Ferris told me to.
What?
Goodbye, Maggie.
Estella, look out! Oh, that girl's not going to live very long.
That was my car, Mrs. Ferris. We almost hit her.
But what does that have to do with me?
We didn't know who it was at the time. We weren't going fast.
Crazy kid that... didn't even look up, after which she just kept on walking. In fact, she ran. I yelled at her, but she wouldn't stop.
Oh, well, that's Estelle. Estelle?
Estella. Blair is her last name.
Oh. Oh, yes. And somebody wrote to you about her, Mr. Valentine?
Her uncle, Mrs. Ferris. I explained that to you. I wanted to see your husband, the professor, about it, but you...
Oh, well, he's in class. Good heavens, there are so many in summer session. Some of his classes are 70 and 80, regular tent shows. And in psychology, too, the poor thing.
Now, look, Mrs. Ferris, it was this Estella's roommate who suggested we come right over here, a girl named Maggie.
Well, I don't...
Miss Maggie was scared to death about her. She's out looking for her now. She can't find
her. She said Estella suddenly started acting so strangely and ran out saying that your husband had told her to go someplace.
I can't imagine where. Or maybe she meant she told my husband to go someplace. Oh, look here, Mr. Valentine, I really don't understand what you're doing.
Okay, here, take a look.
Oh, letter. Oh, the uncle. Dear Mr. Valentine, would appreciate it if you drop by to see my niece, Estella Blair. I'm her guardian and now too busy to see her very often. But I've been worried the way she's acted lately, her last few visits. She's finished studying for her degree at summer session at, well, that makes it so clear. Some sort of a woman's counselor, are you? Dorothy Dix? Oh, I'm afraid now I'm really baffled.
Mrs. Ferris, I talked to her uncle on the phone. He's worried about the girl because he feels she's hiding something. Something to do with your husband, Professor Ferris.
Oh, excuse my underestimating you. You do go straight to the point, don't you? You think this girl and my husband... So you've come to me. Well, come in. Like some iced tea? Awfully hot. I'd give you something cooler if I thought you wouldn't tell.
No, thanks. You're wrong, Mrs. Ferris. Nobody thinks that at all. If we did, we wouldn't be so tactless.
If you'd seen the girl, I'm sure you wouldn't. I remember her now. A little too dull, I'm afraid, for the teeth.
The teeth?
That's what the girls call my husband. You know, the teeth. He smiles so beautifully. And at everyone. No. No, I understand you're worried and blunt because you think the next car might not stop as quickly as yours did. You almost killed a girl and you think she's still in danger and outlawed something.
And we want to know about her fast.
Well, it's a logical enough conclusion, though. Thinking of my husband that way. Every girl in college is always in love with him, you know. But you just picked the wrong girl, that's all. Now, if it had been a red-headed research student named Mrs. Cyril Jensen who keeps his notes for him, bless her heart...
Look, Mrs. Ferris.
No, you look. I'm not just talking. I think you should know that my husband and I don't have much in common except existence. If it weren't inconvenient, we'd be separated. So none of what I'm talking about means anything to me. My husband is a perfectly harmless research psychologist. In love with nothing but his deep, dark work. And that's quite all right with me. This is the way I stall gossip, you see. I tell people first. But did all this happen about 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock? Well, yes, in a way. Stella ran out of the dormitory at 11, started acting strangely then.
Just what do you mean, Mr. Ferris? Well, I don't quite know. But there is something peculiar. I don't mean the Cecile Jensen I spoke of, but you see, the campus stables are right up the lane from here. And another girl, Vicky, who goes riding sometimes with my husband, is quite innocent, really. Oh, I know this is so confusing. There are so many women around.
Well, go on, go on. What was it you started to say?
George, listen. Well, just that this other girl beside your Estella was cutting my husband's class, too, at 11:30. I met her on the sidewalk. She had a job pulled down, just looked right past me, but... But she said, very quietly, she wasn't going to class. She was going riding, instead. Look, George, it's an ambulance. Riding. It's going up the lane, Mr. Valentine. The stables. Hurry, out this way.
It was Vicky, Mrs. Ferris, that blonde girl. Goes riding with the professor, you know the one. It was a square nose that threw her.
Calm down, will you? Calm down. Just tell me what happened.
They don't even know whether she's going to live or not. Oh, she took a terrible spill. She was thrown, mister, don't you understand me? By one of my gentlest horses, too. I thought it was funny, Mrs. Ferris, when she came here this time of day, but she said she had to go riding because it was 11 o'clock.
Day. Now, I told you, Mr. Valentine, that's what she said to me. And what Estella said...
All right, all right. Okay. Come here, friend. Now, which horse was it?
The square nose. He came galloping in by himself. I called an ambulance.
All right, never mind, never mind. Just stop shaking, will you? You've seen riding accidents before. Now, what's the rest of it?
Well, it's just that I don't know what I should do, mister, who I should call.
What do you mean, call?
Well, here... This strap holds the cinch. Now, that girl, that Vicky, she always saddles up herself. Has her own stuff. She's a good rider, too. But anybody would have been thrown with this. See?
Yeah, I see. Strap's been cut. Cut halfway through.
Yeah.
Then it broke the rest of the way, I suppose, when the horse galloped.
Yeah, that's what I figure, sir. Well, I mean, what should I do? She came here and she said, Professor Ferris told me to go riding at 11 o'clock.
What?
Only looks more like somebody wanted to kill her at 11 o'clock.
It's so confusing, so many women around. But somehow they all seem to be tied up together, George.
You mean tied up with the same guy, Brooksy, in the same time?
And Estella, George. She did all the same things and said all the same things that this girl...
Okay, get the police. They can find her faster than we can.
George...
Me? I got a date with a professor right now.
Well, I'm glad you like my little show. Perhaps I should go on the stage. But of course, an educational class...
Excuse me.
What is that
this
really
is Psychology 110, isn't it?
Such as therapy.
Isn't that Professor
it
Ferris?
It is hypnosis I wish to demonstrate.
I said, excuse me. Look, young lady, it can't be that fascinating.
Of what
oh,
may
I see. Center stage seems to be up this way, doesn't it?
Our experiment
or is it you they're all staring
really
at, Miss...
Jensen.
Oh, wait a minute, sure, but...
Well, you visiting with something? I'm sorry, I have to leave early. Excuse me?
Because she's heard the chimes, hasn't she? The 12 o'clock chime? Yeah, there she goes. Where are you going, Cecile? Miss Jensen?
The redhead.
I'm sorry, Professor, but I have to leave early.
Well, but we were talking about hypnosis, Miss Jensen. I had some very interesting things to say about things people can be made to do through hypnosis.
I know. Forgive me, sir, but I must go now.
It's quite all right, really. Ferris told me.
Ferris told me.
All right, ladies, I guess we're a success. Those words were given to her yesterday. Class dismissed.
Hey, wait a minute there.
Demonstration is all over, young man.
Oh, no, it's not, friend. Here, let me get by. Will you excuse me, girl?
I guess we've scared another visitor, ladies. I'll reassure you, sir, there's nothing to be frightened of. You've only stumbled into a very ordinary demonstration of posted...
Yeah, where'd you send that girl?
Miss Jensen? Oh, she won't even leave the building. It's only a joke. You see, a person can't be hypnotized into doing anything really dangerous or against his nature.
She said Ferris told me to. Now, that's you. And that's what the others said. So you do all this hypnotizing stuff,
of
huh?
Of course. It's part of our classwork in psychology.
Did you hypnotize Estella Blair, too, and a blonde girl named Vicky?
Well, naturally. Suggestions, really. Under hypnosis, I give them suggestions on what they should do, you see, at 11 o'clock. For heaven's sake, young man, there's nothing to be alarmed about. They don't know why, but they do what I tell them, that's all. And why those particular girls? Well, in demonstrations like this, I've given hypnotic suggestions to practically every woman in this class.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. When you get in your car and start out for the high mountain country, make sure your car's engine has the extra protection of RPM motor oil. Those long, winding, steep grades mean extra work for your engine. A good chance for carbon to clog up rings and valve stems. But you can avoid carbon trouble by using RPM. First choice where driving's toughest. It's specially compounded to prevent carbon formations, and that's why folks will tell you more people prefer RPM than any other motor oil. RPM also prevents the corrosion caused by acid-laden moisture, sticks to engine hotspots, and stops sludge trouble. In fact, it's the best engine insurance you can buy. So wherever you motor in the West, ask for RPM. First choice where driving's toughest. Ask for it at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations, where they say and mean, we take better care of your car.
I don't know, this professor sounds like a bit of a perv.
Yeah, hypnotizing young ladies and then just laughing it off like that. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. Doesn't everyone? Wouldn't you?
Hmm. Yeah.
Next,
where's my pepper?
I don't know.
I need my pepper spray even when I'm listening to that guy.
I'm telling you.
I don't know. I guess some people would be susceptible to it. I just don't know how all these things about most of them are, you know, acting and stuff. But I just don't know how much people can actually be hypnotized into doing something they wouldn't do.
Yeah. And I think there has to be some element of releasing yourself to it. I went to a public display of a hypnotist, and I sort of made an ass of the guy. Because, you know, he's supposed to have had me under hypnosis, and I looked at him like, I'm like, really, dude? Everybody else, you know, the audience laughed and stuff like that. He got mad and chased me off the stage. But it was like, come on, this, you know, this is bullshit.
Yeah, okay. I have a friend who used hypnosis to help him stop smoking. Mm-hmm. And it worked for like 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden it slowed or stopped working, and he had to go get hypnotized again. You know, but that's a lifelong project to do it that way.
Yeah. See, something like that, though, you're willing. You're submitting to it for a purpose.
Right. Yes.
I'm just so much of a control freak. I don't think I can let go. I'm like, I'm not going down that path. I'm
there
sorry.
You go, folks. Squawk like a chicken. Yes.
Yeah, I will not be squawking like a chicken publicly for you or anyone else, pal.
Squawk.
Yeah. I mean, at least I want to dress up for the part, so I have to talk like a chicken.
It all goes back to the time that Dale was mascot for the Mr. Chicken franchise. Yep.
Yeah, I'm having bad flashbacks about that. It's really troublesome.
Because of Mr. Chicken, it's all about the chicken. Yep.
It is all about the chicken. And we lost CW. I'm sure she'll be back.
Okay.
But, you know, we've got, like I said, this pervo, Professor Pervo stalking the young ladies. It's not good. CW, did you come back with your pepper spray? We think she's back, maybe.
She's having fishbowl syndrome again. You're familiar with that, Dale, fishbowl syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. Network is weak.
Maybe if you hold on to the rooster, that'll help ground you, you know?
There we go. Dave's trying to beam you some energy there, some positive
there you
vibes.
Go. Hopefully we have positive vibes there.
Yep. Get you back where you need to be.
All right. Get away from the microphone. Phone, I'm telling you.
Oh, wow. Gar made a little ad. You're a little late, Gar. His voice is out, so he won't be here in tonight. But he just put up an ad for Let George Do It.
Okay.
And retitled it 11 o'clock. Except
tonight's story, 11 o'clock. Yeah, pretty cool.
You're a bit late, but it's really cool. Anyway.
It is.
I like Bob Bailey as George Valentine. Bob Bailey's good at this.
He has that kind of voice that... Yeah, he just has that kind of voice. What can I say? What's so weird is his voice doesn't look like him at all. What works so good on radio does not work in the movies for him. He just looks like kind of an awkward guy. But when you put him on radio, he just looks like sounds like the All-American, you know?
So what did he look like? Elijah Cook Jr.? Anyone familiar with Elijah Cook Jr.?
Yes.
trying to think how I would describe him. You know, because the picture you most common you see of him has him like in a flat top of him, you know, like a young Sergeant Carter type thing, you know?
Not like Clint Howard. Clint Howard.
Clint Howard? No, no.
He did not age well. Sorry, kid, but it was cute for Gentle Ben, but after that.
Yeah, that he had kind of a hard adolescent and young adulthood before he got himself sorted out.
Yep.
So. Plus, he made it in almost every one of his brother's movies, so, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Plus a few other things. Wasn't he in a couple of horror flicks, I think? Clint Howard as an adult?
He did a few other things as well. Yeah.
He's like the Ice Cream Man or something. Creepy. Anyway, let's wrap up.
Is he in one of the Leprechaun movies?
Oh, yeah. If not, he should have been. 11 o'clock. Let George do it. Let's find out what this turbo professor is.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine. 11 o'clock, and Estella, the girl you came to this women's college campus to visit, walked out of her dormitory and disappeared. At 11 o'clock, too, another girl, Vicky, a blonde, strangely decided to go horseback riding, and now Vicky is in a hospital because she was thrown from her horse. Only her saddle had been tampered with. Someone wanted to kill Vicky. Well, you've found that there's quite a simple explanation for 11 o'clock, for the girls' strange behavior. They were part of a demonstration in Professor Ferris' psychology class. And if your name is George Valentine, what you want to explain is that
attempted murder.
But what has actually happened, Mr. Valentine? A cop strap, that's all. I can't believe there's any connection. Why, this little exhibition of mine, there's nothing to it.
Yeah, post-hypnotic suggestion, you call.
I ask for volunteers. The whole class sees it. They all want to get in on it. I hypnotize the subject, tell her to do something the next day. Now, that's the only difficult part, the time. But after I've instructed her, I wake her up. She doesn't know what she's been told to do. But then the next day when she hears the chimes, that's the cue I use, the campus chime.
11 o'clock.
Exactly. Then the subject is seized with a desire to do what I have previously told her. She still doesn't know why. Of course, she's not in a trance or anything. She simply does it. Post-hypnotic suggestion.
Of all the
tricks. Now, please listen to me. You can't instruct a person to do a harmful thing, to commit murder, for instance. It can't be done.
But you sent that girl, Vicky, straight into
what? I told Vicky to go riding at 11, that's all. She wasn't in a dream. She had all her faculties.
What did you tell Estella to do?
Oh, well, I have notes on all the suggestions I gave. Merely to cut the class, I think. I noticed that girl had never missed one before, and so it occurred to me a little vacation.
I'll take it from your notes, thank you. At 1 at 12 o'clock, you said she was only to stand up and walk out just now, as she did.
Oh, Cecile, the redhead. Come on, quickly.
What?
I'll show you. Oh, no, nothing is going to happen to her.
Better not, Buster.
Yeah, just a couple of rooms down.
A few of the girls are still there.
I'll show you what sinister things I tell them to do.
She's putting water in a bucket. You worried about the flowers, Cecile? Well, they need a little water, don't you think? Look at her.
Hey, what's this all about?
She's going to water some flowers. Paper flowers, if you look closely.
Paper flowers? And she doesn't know why she's doing it? She won't question it until it's over? Oh, this is very, very funny.
Yes, but you see, I'd scarcely send anyone to the brink of a precipice.
Okay. So let's see the others, those notes.
Of course. I have them right here. Someplace. Ah, yes, here we are. Naturally, I want to take every precaution, but I assure you that Cecile's case there is a typical example of the symptoms.
But why did he do it? Did you see it? What happened? She just poured the water. Look at her face.
Get away from there.
She's dead. Her face.
All right, then. I'll get her. Stand back, will you? Hey, get that flower flying. There we are.
What in heaven's name?
He can still save her. Call the fire department. Get a pulmotor, quick. Well, don't you stand there? She poured water on the flowers, didn't you see? But look what was hidden in the middle of them. A live electric wire.
Almost all the class, that demonstration, almost all of them. Cecile will live, won't she? Electric shock isn't
come on,
always...
Come on, the rest of them, I said.
Miss Duval. No, we've got to her already. Miss Perkins, she's gone somewhere by now.
I tried to soda fountain, sir.
Oh, good Lord, Valentine, I can't...
The rest of them, I said... Now we're sure somebody's using your harmless demonstration for murder.
Well, we found three girls doing somersaults in the lawn, sir. Two others went out by the lake someplace. Oh, I got a doctor. Another one of them fancy birds. He claims he can help unsnap them from that suggestion thing. Oh, there's another girl went out for a walk someplace. And the ones who'd already left the class for lunch are scattered all over.
George, look at this.
What is it, Brooksy?
Just a handkerchief, but I think it might explain...
Get the explanations. There are 14 girls still unaccounted
for. But, George, it's Estella's handkerchief. It was right in here, George. I didn't realize whose it was until that Maggie girl told me...
Yeah, it's a funny place to come walking, though. Brush, tall weeds.
Maggie saw Estella take this handkerchief with her purse when she left the dormitory.
Professor Ferris insists he just told Estella to cut the grass.
A shot.
It was over this way, Brooksy.
George, there she is.
Hey, Estella.
It's all right. Wait. Estella.
Hey, kid, slow down. We're not going to hurt you.
That shot. Where did it come from?
Who are you?
My
name's Valentine. Now, you're not hurt, are you?
No. Mr. Valentine? You're coming to see me. You're a friend of my uncle.
Oh, the poor kid was scared to death, George.
Yeah.
Shot. With a shot. I went for a walk, didn't I?
Who was it, Estella? Somebody shot at you. Who was it?
I don't know. I don't
come
know.
Come on, let's get out of here.
The other way, George. It's only a short distance to the lane where the...
Lane?
Yeah, I see what you mean. The riding stable.
What?
Come on, kid. You'll be all right.
George, I meant it's right near the Ferris house.
Well,
Oh, you found her. That's Miss...
Stella Blair, Professor Ferris.
Oh, of course. Well, where on earth have you...
Get on the phone. Tell the sergeant.
All right, George.
Come on now. Sit down, kid.
I'm all right.
Well, young lady, we've been pretty worried, you know. We've
I'm thought... perfectly all right. My uncle sent Mr. Valentine to see me.
Oh!
Well, hello, Charlotte.
Oh, I was just... Mr. Valentine,
yes? Yes, yes, that's right, Mrs. Ferris. We found her.
Oh. Well, I was outside, you know. I've been looking for you, too, Estelle. I thought I heard something out there.
Yes, I don't doubt it.
I'll get you something, my dear. Wouldn't you like to light it?
Oh, Charlotte, Miss Blair is perfectly
all
right.
Oh, you're smart, Alex. Show off tricks.
What?
So much fun telling all these poor girls what to do.
Charlotte.
Listening to them laugh at your wonderful demonstration.
Please.
The big smiling teeth. What? Where were you a few minutes
Charlotte,
ago?
Charlotte, now stop it.
And this is the girl they tell all their secrets to. I know. I've been finding out things today.
Cut it out. Cut it out. Cut it out, both of you, will you?
11 o'clock. 11 o'clock.
It was a legitimate demonstration, Mr. Valentine.
Mr. Valentine came to see me.
Oh, look at her. Look what he's done to her.
Stella.
She's still hypnotized.
Don't be ridiculous. It doesn't work that way.
Works any way you want it to, doesn't it?
Of course not. Now, look at me, young lady. It was only for a few moments yesterday, Valentine, when the suggestions were given.
I'm perfectly all right.
Well, my dear, there's no possible reason
for... No, really, I am. I just...
Well, then why can't you look at me? Perhaps I'd better see her for a few moments alone, Valentine. Miss Blair...
Did you hear that? Did you? I'll tell you what I meant a minute ago, Mr. Valentine. I'll see you alone for a few minutes.
Oh, for heaven...
Go on, Mrs.
The
Ferris.
Magic words. Oh, I don't mean he does anything, that he isn't a beautiful moral specimen. It's his ego that gets petted. And maybe their imaginations, every
I'm
one
sorry,
of them...
I'm sorry, but I will not stand for these...
She was in love with him. And Cecile Jensen, worse than any... The big, smiling male in the middle of a woman's college. What he teaches isn't important. But every one of them, every one of them, every one he brings in front of, he goes into making him fall.
I've never so much as looked twice at this girl, son.
He knows what I don't know. You've looked twice at plenty of the others.
Be quiet, will
you? I'll see you alone for a few minutes. And whatever it is... That might explain the terrible thing that you've been the cause of today would disappear in a pink cloud.
Stop it! Stop it! I can't stand to hear you fighting like that. Chimes. 2 o'clock. Only 2 o'clock. Mr. Valentine, I do know something that might help. But I'm afraid I would rather tell it to the professor first.
George.
Yeah.
George, I talked to the sergeant.
Yeah, Brooksy.
Every one of the girls has been rounded up. They're all safe.
Oh, thank heaven.
So that's that. Professor, a person can't be hypnotized unless he wants to be. Isn't that correct?
Hmm? Oh, yes. But if we're going to find out what Estella has...
And everybody in your class yesterday heard that the others were told to do, right? You also wrote it down in notes.
Yes, of course.
So whoever cut the saddle and rigged up the electric wire and fired the shot out here just now would have known what to arrange in advance. There was plenty of time. It's only by luck that they didn't turn out to be murders.
Mr. Valentine.
Take it easy, Stella. Now, don't be frightened.
But what are you driving at, Mr. Valentine?
It's also possible for a person to resist hypnosis. You can't be hypnotized unless you want to be. But you could quite easily pretend to be hypnotized. That is possible, isn't it, Estella?
I don't...
Never mind. Yesterday, the professor gave a cue on which his suggestions would take effect. The campus chimes, ringing 11 or 12 o'clock, whatever it was.
Yes, that's right. It was the sound of the chimes which...
But Estella, that friend of yours, Maggie, told me that before the chimes started ringing, you said you had to go for a walk and cut your class because Ferris had told you to.
It was 11 o'clock.
Yes, you knew what you were supposed to do, which you wouldn't have if you'd really been hypnotized yesterday. So you asked her the time. And then because she said 11, you started acting strangely. Which a person acting out a post-hypnotic suggestion also doesn't do. There's no dream, no trance.
Oh, Mr. Valentine, Estella just couldn't...
I'm afraid she did, Mrs. Ferris. The girl who always had to listen to the other girl's confidences. And they don't really generally confide in another pretty girl. I'm sorry, Estella. But, Professor, you're not much of a psychologist, are you? She's been in your classes 4 years, and you still have trouble remembering her name. You just now slapped her in the face, saying you wouldn't look at her twice. Oh, she kept up a great pose of disinterest.
But that shot you mentioned that someone fired at her...
That was my mistake. Well, Estella, your wild plan to attract attention for once, even with the girls who really were on the smiling list, it scared you pretty badly when it started happening, didn't it? So badly you almost killed yourself.
Oh, is that...
Or tried to. or had buck fever when you heard us coming.
I love him. I love him. I can't help it.
You're so mixed up, you don't know what you're doing. But a minute ago, I thought you might be in danger if you went into the other room alone with Professor Ferris. You just finally realized what you wanted to do in the first place, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I wouldn't.
Because it was the other way around. He was the one in danger.
Let go of me. Please.
I'm sorry, kid, but I have to have that gun in your purse.
No, none of it's true. None of it. I did.
Look out. Okay. Nobody's hurt. It's all over.
George, that poor thing. And I think Professor Ferris...
You see, Brooksy, Mrs. Ferris was just jealous. Shot her mouth off because that sophisticated pose was a bluff. But he didn't actually do anything. Oh, sure, he was a little blind, a little egotistical. But how could he know what an unhappy, twisted-up little girl Estella was behind the surface?
Her uncle should have gotten somebody to help her a lot sooner.
That's right. Well, at least nobody's dead. Whatever happens to her, she won't have murder hanging over her. Oh... What do you say we change the subject, huh?
Okay, sure, George. But you know, hypnotism...
Oh, no, there we go again.
George, how do you suppose it feels to be hypnotized?
How should I know?
Haven't you ever wondered what...
Well, sure, I've wondered about it. Hey, Brooksy, look me straight in the eye.
Hmm? What?
Yeah, go ahead, that's it, yeah. Now relax. Relax completely. That's fine. You're feeling drowsy, receptive. Your eyes are staring straight at mine. Staring. Staring.
Yes, George? Well, what do you want me to do now?
Whatever you want. I feel sort of sleepy.
Oh!
Good night, Angel.
Of advice about that big investment of yours, your automobile. The Car Saver men at Standard Stations and independent Chevron gas stations will tell you this. You can stretch the oil in your crankcase or you can stretch the life of your car, but you can't do both. Now, as a matter of fact, the surest way to reduce the life of your car is to run the oil so long that it begins to do more harm than good. Contamination becomes excessive and the additives have little opportunity to control wear and protect the precision-fitted engine parts from rust and harmful deposits. So, to give your car best protection, have the crankcase drained and refilled with RPM motor oil every 1,000 miles. Ask for this Car Saver service at independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations, where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure, George Valentine, has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Daly is starred as George, with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Virginia Eiler was heard as Estella, Lorene Tuttle as Mrs. Ferris, Larry Dobkin as Ferris, Charlotte Lawrence as Maggie, Jane Webb as Cecile, and Bill Boucher as the groom. The music was composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter, your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
There we go. And, maybe he wasn't a perv. But that's not to take chances.
Yeah. I don't know. He still seems like a perv to me. But that's egotistical perv. But, you know.
Egomatistical. Yep.
Yeah. Easy for you to say.
Well, that's Here's another thing that's easy to say. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story as written by Gar, no less.
There's two. You take the first one, Dale.
With apologies to Gar, the word alibi is just another way to say, I didn't do it.
True.
Eeny, meeny, chili, beeny, the spirits are about to speak.
Or?
And moral number two. Apologies to Gar. There are four types of hypnosis. But I've been hypnotized, and the only people that could tell us what they are, and there are... what they are. The other three didn't tell us. Three.
I see. They were hypnotized, so they didn't tell us.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
11 o'clock. 11 o'clock. There's something we got to do at 11. I can't remember for the life of me. 11 o'clock.
Something like that.
A good story. And Bob Bailey, of course, making it great.
Yes.
Radio yumminess.
Even some of these old detective shows I hear, and they don't really have a lot of heart to it. His seems to have heart to it, the way he delivers. the one that does Philip Marlowe, he just seems like just like angry all the time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but so that doesn't really do a whole lot. Johnny Boy, the original ones, actually there were like four before Bob Bailey took it over. They all had this big, just real tough guy thing and didn't let in or anything. I love what he did to Johnny Dollar. Bob Bailey did to Johnny Dollar as well. But yeah, they're just so one-dimensional, so many of those guys. And you had Howard Duff who did Sam Spade. That was not one-dimensional. When you had Richard Diamond, Private Detective, that was not one-dimensional. But some of these other ones, even as much as I liked the guy when he did he was the voice for the announcer for the Adventures of Superman and things like that. He just didn't care for his portrayal.
Jackson Beck?
Jackson Beck, yes. Thank you.
All right. I love that guy's voice. Just
yeah,
one of those.
He's really a great voice, but he played it so... matter-of-factly, I guess, is what I want to say, you know?
Yeah. Didn't give you the oomph.
Did not give me the oomph.
Oomph. Yeah, got to have oomph.
But with that oomph, sometimes I get, you know, I fall over. So that's
right.
How I get the
like
oomph
to give
sometimes.
Some of that oomph to CW's microphone.
Yeah. Oomph. I need more oil. I need more cowbell.
You sound great now.
There you are. See, I told you, holding the toaster would make a great big bit of difference there.
Yeah, but you always tell me that when I'm in the bathtub. So hold on to the toaster.
Yeah, yours is for a different reason, Dale.
Okay. Yeah. Got a charge out of that one. Sorry, it was
and
a current. Sorry, it was a current joke.
Current joke. Yes, it was.
Save your live wire. Anyway.
Okay. I think it might be done.
It could be done. The Dave Letterman's milk delivery man's school of comedy. Milk that joke for everything you can.
Till the cow comes home, yeah.
That's right.
That cow comes home. Cow has to come home for you to milk it. What the heck?
Yep. And with that, we should probably play a program we've never had here before. Appointment with Fear. And instead of 11 o'clock, this time the clock strikes 8.
Yeah, and the thing was, this is one of the few times when the Brits stole something from us. We steal something from all their shows. The Sanford and Son and Three's yep. Company and yep. All of the game shows that we've stolen from them. Well, this is one where John Dickinson Carr, who wrote a lot of early suspenses and stuff, took the idea, went over to the UK, and he came up with A Pointless Fear, using basically the same music, using a guy called the Man in Black to host it, and using probably several of the stories he wrote for suspense to kick off this A Pointless Fear. There's only a handful of them around. This is one of them.
Ah, and it looks like we've got an original broadcast date of May the 18th of 1940.
And
4.
Yep.
Stole that from Lights Out. Or Suspense.
Appointment with Fear. This is your storyteller, the Man in Black. Here again to bring you another placid evening in our Far Side series, Appointment with Fear. Loss of memory, the eerie darkness which closes down on the brain, is a subject which has often amused me, and that is why I have brought a guest tonight, Dr. Gideon Fell, the celebrated schoolmaster turned detective, to tell you about the Barton case. There sits Dr. Fell himself, all 20 stone of him, with his four chins, his bandit's mustache, his eyeglasses on the broad black ribbon, his face fiery with controversy. And when he tells you about the Barton case, as he told it to me, we trust we shall keep our promise to bring you An Appointment with Fear. The Clock Strikes 8 by John Dixon Carr, produced by Martin C. Webster.
The Barton case, sir, was a grim business. I saw the last night of it. I saw what the human soul can endure without quite going mad, and I have no wish to see its like again. For I ask you to imagine yourself in the position of that girl, Helen Barton. Suppose, just suppose, that you wake up suddenly in the middle of the night. You wake up as though from a nightmare, with a feeling you've been asleep a very long time. The room is cold and nearly dark, with the faint glimmer of a fire almost out. Slowly, very slowly, you begin to realize it's a room you've never seen before. That fact, above all, strikes at you through a mist of fear. There's a queer atmosphere, like old stone and disinfectant, and no sound at all in that dim room, except...
What is it? What was that noise?
Now, lean back in your bed, my dear. It's all right.
Well, that's good advice, Miss Barton. You take it easy.
I think I must have been dreaming.
You were having a nightmare, but it's all right now. Nothing's going to hurt you.
Not yet.
Be quiet, Hannah.
No offense, I'm sure, but some people who occupy this room get on my nerves.
I don't want to seem stupid. I know there must be some explanation, but I don't understand this.
Understand what, my dear?
Where am I? How did I get here? And who are you?
Now, please, miss, whatever else you do, don't start that all over again.
Start what all over again?
Telling us you've lost your memory and don't even know what your name is.
Are you insane? Of course I know what my name is. I'm Helen Barton.
Well, it's a mercy you admit that at last.
At last? I've never spoken to you before in my life. Where am I? Why on earth is it so cold?
Well, it's pretty hard to be cozy here in the middle of December.
Did you say December?
That's right, that's right. The 18th of December.
Oh, you're fooling me. You're playing a trick on me. Oh, my head feels queer and I want to cry. I won't. Could we have some lights?
Of course, straight away.
Can't be December, I tell you. That's impossible. It was only yesterday and all the flowers were out. I was going up to see Philip. That's it. I was going up to see Philip.
Philip who?
Philip Gale, the man I was going to marry. He's coming back to me now. It was yesterday, and I started up to see Philip.
Oh, for heaven's sake, miss.
Be quiet, Hannah. And don't on her those lights yet.
Oh, she's having us on,
Hannah. This girl's shaking all over, and she doesn't know where she is. Now, listen to me. I'm going to sit down on the bed beside you. Now, just take my hands and hold them tight. What's wrong? Why are you looking at me like that?
I've got something to tell you.
Is it about Philip?
It is about him, yes, in a way. I want you to keep tight hold of my hands.
You see, Miss Barton, this is Maidhurst Prison.
Steady now, steady.
I'm still dreaming. I must be. It was the end of August, and I started up to see Philip. You can't mean I'm in prison.
Now listen, my dear. I'm afraid it's worse than that.
Worse than that?
Look over there. You see where there's a little bit of fire in the grate?
Well?
And paper on the wall and pictures and a carpet on the floor.
Why can't you come out straight and tell her? They're going to hang you in the morning, Miss Barton. This is the condemned cell.
No!
With sudden shock, the prison clock smote on the shivering air. But I won't quote that any further. I have too vivid a memory of sitting up that night with Colonel Andrews, the governor of the prison. It was in a little office with the lampshade tilted so that I could see his face. And he said,
I hate executions, loathe them. Can't sleep the night before. If you hadn't offered to come here and save my life, I...
This is a strange time, sir, to talk of saving lives.
There's no good being sentimental about the thing. That's the law. I didn't make it.
But I gather you're not exactly happy about this case.
I'm not, and that's a fact. Mind you, there's no doubt whatever about the girl's guilt.
I am gratified to hear it.
But if only she'd confess. Most of them do, you know.
They confess to you?
To me or to the hangman. Sometimes I wish I had any job in the world but mine. If only the girl would confess. If only she'd just stop this nonsense about not remembering.
Not remembering what?
Not remembering how she shot Philip Gale. Not remembering anything, even her own name. Total amnesia, covering a crime.
Do you mean to say that a woman suffering from loss of memory can be tried and sentenced to death?
No. Not if she really has lost her memory. But this amnesia defense was a fake.
You're quite sure of that?
Oh, naturally. The judge would never have allowed you to come to trial if he hadn't been convinced she was shamming. Even then, she might have got off with a life sentence or even with manslaughter if it hadn't been for the nature of the crime.
She didn't cut anybody up, I hope.
No. But it was almost as bad. She shot a man who'd raised his hands and begged for mercy. That completely damned her in the eyes of the jury.
And yet... You have doubts.
Tell you, I haven't any doubts. And in any case, it's none of my business.
How has she acted since she's been here?
Oh, model prisoner. But I wish she'd stop this business of seeming to be in a daze. It's getting on my nerves. Nice girl, too. I knew her grandfather.
She lived near here?
Yes. Born and bred in Maidhurst. She got mixed up with a thoroughgoing swine named Philip Gale. Mad about him. Wouldn't hear a word against him. Very He threw her over for a woman with money.
I see.
Yeah. He had a bungalow on White Rose Hill. She went up there one Sunday afternoon.
Alone?
Yes. Herbert Gale, Philip's brother, heard them screaming at each other. He ran in to see what was wrong. Philip was trying to chase the girl up. She grabbed a .32 revolver out of a table drawer and told Philip to put up his hands. Well, that scared him. He did put up his hands. Then she shot him dead and went down in a fit.
And afterwards?
Afterwards, she couldn't remember.
Couldn't remember anything?
Pretended she didn't even recognize her own family. She said, "Who is Philip Gale?"
And you hang her tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Without even hearing her side of the case.
Confounded man, there's no doubt about the evidence.
Are you sure?
She killed Philip Gale. Gale's brother, Herbert, saw her do it. This hypocrisy about not remembering...
Emotional shock could do just that, you know.
She wasn't so emotionally shocked that it disturbed her aim. She drilled him clean through the heart at 15 feet. The bullet entered in a dead straight line through coat, waistcoat, shirt, and heart. Could have run a pencil through the holes. Now don't sit there puffing out your cheeks and waving a cigar at me. I'm only trying...
Tell me, Colonel Andrews, aren't you talking to convince yourself?
No.
Suppose that the girl is telling the truth. Suppose she has lost her memory.
I tell you...
All right, you don't believe that. But suppose it. And then suppose in some black hour just before the hangman comes that her memory returns.
Don't talk rubbish.
Sir, I have lived long enough to know that mental suffering is the cruelest form of suffering on this earth. Imagine yourself in that position. You come out of a daze into what you thought was a safe and pleasant world. You don't know where you are. You don't know what's happened. You only know that when the clock strikes 8, they are going to take you out and hang...
No! Did you hear that?
Yes.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Yes.
It isn't possible.
I very much fear it is.
Sometimes, you know, we have to use drugs.
Drugs?
Yes. When we take them to the execution shed... It's only a short distance, and we try to get it over in a matter of seconds, but sometimes they can't walk. Yes, yes, what is it?
I beg pardon, sir, but I thought I'd better get you, or the doctor, or for the chaplain, or both.
What's the matter with you, man? You're white as a ghost.
Can't help that, sir. I've been a warder in this place for a matter of 15 years, but I never knew anything like this.
It's the upstairs room, I suppose, Miss Barton.
Yes, sir.
Hysterical?
Yes, sir. She says... Well, she says she remembers now.
I see.
She's carrying on something awful, sir. That ain't all. She claims she never done it.
What's that?
She claims she never killed Mr. Gale at all.
Never killed?
That's all, Harris. Young girl.
Yes, sir.
Any other disturbances in the building?
Well, sir, they're a bit restless in Wing A.
Well, that's usual.
Yes, sir. And there's a bloke... outside the prison, I mean, who keeps hanging about in front of the main gate. You can see him by the street lamp. First he'll take a few little quick steps back and forth, and then he'll run and stick his face against the bars of the gate, and then he'll go back to the pacing again. Fair gave me the creeps even before this other thing.
You don't happen to know who it is?
It's the other Mr. Gale, sir. Oh. Herbert Gale. I hadn't the heart to chase him away.
All right, Harris, all right. Go ahead, I'll be along in a minute.
Yes, sir.
So the girl claims to be innocent. You heard that?
Yes, I heard it.
What do you mean to do?
Well, I'll see her, of course. But it won't affect the issue.
Not even if she does happen to be innocent?
Phil, in the name of heaven, try to understand my position. I'm dreading this interview. It's against regulations, but I wish you'd come along with me.
If there were only something...
Well, there isn't. Now, where's that whiskey? I think a little stimulant.
She will need the stimulant.
Well, it's a cold night.
It will be colder yet where she's going.
It'll be colder yet where she's going.
I don't understand that. It's going to be hot where I'm going.
Yeah. They're not going to let me go there. They're afraid I'll take over.
Don't worry, Gail. I'll put in a bad word for you.
Oh, good man. I knew I could count on you, Dave.
I'm sure there's a place in Parma for you, Dan.
Wait, what did you say? A place where?
Oh, I think it was Parma.
There you go. You just wanted to hear a polka, didn't you?
Yep.
Ah, yes, everybody prancing cavorts. There we go, good stop. quite a story here.
Am I a little clearer now?
Yes, you are.
Much clearer. That girl's a good screamer. She is a good screamer.
Oh, yes.
I mean, she sounded absolutely horrified.
She's right up there in the leagues of Miss Faye Ray herself.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
She was always a bit of a screamer in movies.
That's what I've heard. But...
Dave. Naughty lad. Naughty lad.
Naughty. Cricket. That simply isn't cricket.
It's not cricket. What is it? Golf?
Cricket is got to be one of the most boring, long-winded games. You take a bat. It's not a baseball bat. It's a flat thing.
Right.
Akin to a paddle. Mm-hmm. And they have a bowler, and they underhandedly or overhandedly launch a ball at you where you hit said ball with a bat, and you're supposed to knock these wickets off of the stand. That's where you get the term, oh, it's a sticky wicket, because it's not coming off as it should. And then the player goes back and forth and back, and basically you're there in the stands saying, oh, rather.
I don't know. Boris Karloff was a big fan of cricket, according to his kinfolk.
There are some people who are mad for cricket. Thing about it, the British aren't happy that the best cricket players in the world happen to be the people that tossed them out of their country. Naming the people of India. Cricket's a huge sport in India, very popular, and they're excellent at it. Revenge.
Yeah. I'm talking to the flat bat. How is that different than baseball?
I think it's different base running. I think there's a lot of differences. I'm not sure exactly.
Yes. White.
I'm just trying to figure out how that game works, that's all. How do you put cork in a paddle when you're trying to cheat? How do you do that?
Pulleys and levers.
Pulleys and levers. There you are.
Pulleys and levers. It's what I say when I don't know. Pulleys and levers. It's a great...
That's the term. Well, that's not quite cricket, old man. I'm terribly sorry. Oh, it's tea time. Crumpet anyone? There you are.
I'll go crumpetless.
I'm doing my best Nigel Bruce here, Watson. Willie Holmes. Willie Holmes. This is not quite on Holmes. Yeah.
Yep. He was always the stuffy one. Well, we better get to, let's see, how long's the whistle? Yeah, we better get flying here and wrap up. The clock strikes at 8 from appointment with fear.
With fear.
Fear.
Quiet, miss. All right, my dear. It's all right. The governor and the other gentlemen, they believe you didn't.
Oh, no, they don't. You needn't try to fool me. Look at them over there in the corner whispering.
Fell, she's lying.
I heard that. You said Fell, she's lying. But I'm not lying. I'm not.
Miss Sarton, you've got to pull yourself together.
Please listen to me. When I first woke up, I didn't even remember Philip was dead. And then it came back to me.
Yes?
I remember standing outside Philip's bungalow on a hot day with the sun in my eyes. I heard a shot inside the bungalow. I ran into the living room and found Philip lying on the floor by the couch with his mouth open and blood on his chest. That's all I do remember. Something hit me.
Something hit you?
On the head, or that's what it seemed like. Please.
The doctor's found no injury to your head, you know.
I tell you...
One moment. Miss Barton. Can you forgive the intrusion of an old buffer who sincerely wants to help you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Fell. I'll try to be sensible.
Now tell me, when you arrived at the bungalow, Philip Gale was already dead?
Yes.
You didn't go up there to quarrel with him?
No. And why should I have killed him anyway? I only went to tell him I was through, finished, fed up with him. Oh, what's the use?
They haven't told you then. That there's a witness who claims to have seen you shoot Gale.
A witness? Who?
Herbert Gale.
But that's a lie.
You didn't take a .32 revolver out of the table drawer?
Oh, this is the first time I've even heard of any revolver. Please believe that.
You didn't order Philip to put up his hands, and then when he did put up his hands...
High above his head?
You didn't shoot him from a distance of about 15 feet?
No.
Your fingerprints were on the revolver. You were still holding it in your hand when Herbert brought a policeman.
It looks as though you've got me, doesn't it?
I'm afraid it does. Just who is this brother, this Herbert Gale?
He's the good member of the family.
Now then, my dear, now then.
I can't help it.
Steady.
Herbert is the good boy. Well, Philip was the bad one. Younger than Philip. Horribly respectable. Pillar of the church. Never smokes or drinks. Has to work hard because Philip inherited what money they had. Oh, let me laugh. You don't know how funny it is.
Herbert's word certainly carries weight.
It's carried weight against me, hasn't it? Why should he want to get me hanged? Why should he tell such a complete bag of lies?
Yes, I wonder why.
Every second I imagine I'm going to wake up and find myself back in that living room again. Looking at Philip's body, just standing and staring at it and feeling sick. And of all things to think of at a time like that, wondering why he was wearing a waistcoat on such a hot day.
Harkens of Athens, what an idiot I've been. What a turnip. What a thundering dunce.
Hear your voice.
The murdered man was wearing a waistcoat. You told me so yourself.
Well, what if I did?
The murdered man was wearing a waistcoat on a hot day. Grasp that beautiful fact, my friend. Keep it in splendor before you. 3 hours of sheer nightmare, and all because I never thought of the waistcoat. Let me ask you just one thing. What happened to the court exhibits in the Gale case?
As a matter of fact, we've still got them. The case was tried and Maidhurst decided.
You've still got them?
Certainly, but what good can they do now?
Sir, let me shake your hand. Let me slap you on the back.
Just a minute, my friend. Stop a bit. Quiet.
I beg your pardon.
Have you forgotten where we are?
No.
Let's face facts. The prisoner has been told that there's... Well, no hope.
Please.
I'm sorry,
please,
but there it is.
Please, you can't.
The cruelest thing you could do now would be to raise hopes that I can't fulfill. You understand that?
I understand it only too well.
This can't be pleasant for any of us. There's nothing in the evidence that justifies any change of plan.
Except, of course, that the girl isn't guilty.
Can you prove that?
To my own satisfaction, yes.
I'm afraid that's not good enough.
Suppose I proved it to you. Conclusively, mind. Out of evidence you gave me yourself, what would you do?
Are you bluffing?
No, speak up, man. What would you do?
That's easy. Phone the Home Secretary and ask for a stay of execution. There's a private line from my office to his country house. But I warn you...
Dr. Fell, is there any hope for me? Is there any hope for
I warn you, Fell, they won't accept fancy theories. They'll only accept facts.
Tell me, Miss Barton, how tall is the estimable Mr. Herbert Gale?
How tall?
Yes. Is he anything like the same height as his brother, Philip?
They're about the same height, 5'10", but I don't see...
If I remember correctly, one of the warders told us that Herbert Gale had been hanging about the front gate all night. I should very much like to speak with him. Colonel Andrews, will you send someone out and ask him to come into your office?
I can't do that.
Why not?
It's against regulations. You'd have to get a special pass.
Then write to him. Curse it all, can't you get it through your correct military head that an innocent person is going to swing in less than 2 hours?
Dr. Bell, I don't know what you're trying to do, but can you do it?
Dear, I can't
but
tell.
But you are going to try.
I'm going downstairs now. Maybe in a very short time, a certain gentleman will be entering this institution without any need of a pass. But don't hope for anything, my dear. Don't hope for anything. Seven o'clock. Less than an hour to go. Oh, why doesn't that warder come and bring the exhibit I want? What's delaying him?
Probably he can't find the stuff.
But you said you had it here.
Things like that I have to get mislaid. It's been a month since the trial. Must you have these exhibits?
In order to prove it to you fully, yes. But if he doesn't come in 2 seconds more...
I can't stay here much longer myself. The chaplain's with us now, but I shall have to take over before the end. Yes, come in.
Sorry to be in so long, sir. I could have sworn it was in one place, and lo and behold, it turns up somewhere else.
Never mind that. Did you get the exhibits?
It's all here, sir, in this suitcase. Where shall I put it?
Put it on Colonel Andrews' desk. Now let's see. Move the lamp over here, will you?
And about Mr. Herbert Gale, sir.
Where is he?
Out in the hall, sir. Do you want to see him now?
Yes, my lad. Very much so. Ask him to come in.
You can come in, sir. This way.
Thank you.
Morning, Herbert. I'm glad to see you. Sit down.
Thank you, Colonel Andrews.
Let me have your hat and coat. This is Dr. Gideon Fell.
How do you do?
The warder said you wanted to see me. I came, of course, but do you think it was quite the right thing to do?
Well, why not?
Well, people might think I was holding a grudge against Helen. Because of Phil, you know.
And you don't hold any grudge?
No. I pity that poor girl from the bottom of my heart. I only wish I hadn't had to testify against her. But what else could I do?
You mean you'd like to help her, even now?
Of course I would. If there's anything I can do to soothe her last moment...
There is something you can do, Mr. Gale.
Well?
You can come with us to the condemned cell.
Are you joking?
No.
Wouldn't it be horrible for Helen?
Yes, probably. But as you point out, she has only a very short time to live.
Yes. Excuse me, but what have you got in that suitcase?
In this suitcase, Mr. Gale? A flattened bullet. The bullet that killed your brother. A .32 revolver. A tweed coat, bloodstained. A tweed waistcoat. Also bloodstained.
Chiafel, what do you expect to prove with that stuff?
Will Mr. Herbert Gale go with us to the condemned cell?
Of course, if you think I can do any good there.
Then, with your permission, I propose to prove that a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Will you walk into my parlor?
An hour to go. Easy, my dear. Easy. Easy. They're not coming already, don't...
Herbert Gale.
I'm very sorry for you, Helen. Please believe that.
Thank you.
I shouldn't have intruded at this painful time. Believe me, Helen. But Dr. Fell and the Colonel here made me come to see you.
You mean you've come to confess?
Confess? What should I confess?
You didn't see me shoot Phil. You know you didn't.
I'm sorry, Helen. I pity you, and I bear you no malice even now. But you did shoot poor old Phil. You shot him in cold blood after you'd asked him to put up his hand.
How high did he put up his hand?
I beg your pardon?
I said, how high did he put up his hand?
Look here, you're only upsetting poor Helen. Is there any purpose in going over all this in the last few minutes before the hangman...
Please!
We might even illustrate what happened with a little experiment. I have here in this suitcase a blood-stained tweed coat and a blood-stained waistcoat. You see them, Mr. Gale?
I see them, yes.
I should like you to take off your own coat and waistcoat. I should then like you to put on this coat and this waistcoat.
I do no such thing.
Why not?
Haven't you tortured poor Helen enough? Colonel Andrews, I appeal to you.
I don't see what the game is, but where's the harm in it?
Helen's feelings.
Never mind my feelings, Herbert. I've only got a few minutes left. Put on the coat and waistcoat.
You hear a condemned person's last request, Mr. Gale. Will you do it?
Yes, if you insist.
I still don't see what this is all about. If something isn't done very soon...
Colonel Andrews, sir?
Yes, Harris?
I thought I'd better tell you, sir, that the chaplain's here and the witnesses are ready and the other person, too.
You mean the hangman, don't you? You mean...
Easy.
He's got to come and bind her hands, sir. It's 8:05.
Sorry, Phil, but this has got to stop. I must ask you to clear out of here immediately while we...
For God's sake, man, wait. I can prove it now.
You can prove what?
I can prove Mr. Herbert Gale lied when he sentenced this girl to death.
You must be out of your mind. You can't do any such thing.
Oh, yes, I can. Do you notice, all of you, that he's wearing the dead man's coat and waistcoat?
All right. Suppose I am. What about it?
You will imagine, Mr. Gale, with this powerful imagination of yours, that I am threatening you with a revolver. Now hold up your hands.
What the devil are you gabbling
hold
about?
Hold up your hands, sir, high above your head.
I won't do it.
You better do it, Herbert. You better do it.
Do as I tell you, man. I'm asking you now.
That's it, Mr. Gale. Don't let your hands tremble when you raise them. Just lift your hands higher, higher still, while I'm threatening you with a revolver. Now look at his coat, everybody. Look at the coat.
I refuse to...
Don't blur your hands, Mr. Gale, and the rest of you. Look at his coat.
The coat, it rises when he lifts his hand.
But of course it does. And the bullet hole in the coat, you notice, rises with it. But the waistcoat is buttoned close to the body. The waistcoat doesn't move.
I think I begin to see.
The bullet hole in the coat has risen at least 4 inches above the corresponding hole in the waistcoat. Yet, the bullet, you told me, penetrated in a dead straight line through coat, waistcoat, and shirt. Therefore, Philip Gale could not possibly have had his hands raised when he was shot.
It's a damned lie!
It was a damned lie, sir. You killed Philip Gale yourself. When Helen Barton walked into the middle of your crime, you knocked her out with a weapon that left no bruise and put the revolver into her hand. Then you discovered, as a gift from heaven, that she had lost her memory. You could tell any lying story you liked. But it upset the apple cart now. The prosecution, the evidence, the verdict were all based on the evidence of the shooting of a man who had his hands raised. Destroy that single lie, and you create the reasonable doubt that destroys the whole case.
Is it true, Colonel Andrews? Is it true? Can't you at least say something?
Harris.
Yes, sir?
You know the private telephone line in my office?
Yes, sir.
Get me the Home Secretary.
so, with the end of the story, the clock strikes 8. We come to the end of our present group of stories in the series, Appointment with Fear. If you have been pleased, if you have been entertained, if you have been able to say that only the graveyards have yawned, then we are deeply grateful. Indeed, with the slightest encouragement, I, who am amused by such things, should return to tell you more tales of corpses and the midnight hour. But until that happy day when we meet again by some evil crossroad of the future, this is your storyteller, the man in black, saying good night and goodbye.
And good gravy. That was a fun one.
Good gravy with good stuffing.
You know it. And a good moral. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story as written by Gar. Okay, I guess it'll be me. With apologies. Gar.
Oh, it helps when, you take the mute button off. Okay, go ahead.
Just to be fair to the camel, that stick that broke its back, it's really heavy. There we go.
Would have to be.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like when a camel breaks his back. It sounds just like this.
Ooh.
Yep.
Oh. Ooh,
on a banana peel. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That and when the skull rolls in and screaming skull. You got to play that sound bite.
Yeah.
I was scared to death at age 12, maybe 11 or 12, when the ghoul was on and he had the screaming skull. And that skull's knocking on the door and the woman comes down to open it. There's a skull and it rolls in and he played that zip scramble sound effect. I was just like, all the fear left you. And I'm like, oh my God, that's hilarious. And that's the beauty. That was the beauty of Horror Host when I was young, you know?
Yep.
Another reason to go into therapy. Oh, well.
Yep. Years of it and 7 broken psychiatrists later, here I am. I broke them all.
Yep.
Hey, we're gonna have a movie tomorrow. We got
a movie
tomorrow.
Get the popcorn.
But more about that later. Popcorn has lots of fiber. Anyway, everyone needed to know that. It's time now, I suppose, for the whistler. I want to hear some whistling. They're ganging up on me. They're ganging up on me. Right, I'll put a stop to that. We'll do that in there. There. I feel better.
Ah, slide whistling.
Slide whistling, ooh. Yes. Got to have one of those when Gar's not around because he's got some interesting sound bites he brings.
Yeah, with
there's
no boinger. You still gotta, yeah, you got to have something. Yeah. There's no boinger.
We're boingerless, so we might as well get right into the whistler. This will be another timely tale. House on Sycamore Street.
Yes. And it does come to us from October of 15th of 1940 and 5.
Signal. Signal gasoline.
I'll give
you
a signal.
Yes, Signal gasoline is the new gasoline you can prove is superior.
Half of a peace sign.
The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by the Whistler. Tonight, the house on Sycamore Road. I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Sometimes weakness results only in failure and disillusionment. Sometimes it's much more serious than that. It can take a sinister turn, sending its victim down the spiral that ends only in death. That's the way it was with Harold Phillips on the day he and his wife, Muriel, rented the house on Sycamore Road from old Sabina Fielding. It wasn't much of a house, but it was destined to be the most important element in Harold's life. Like Sabina, it was old, but there was a kind of majesty about it, veiled as it was behind a mat of unkempt shrubbery and a pair of magnificent elms in the front yard. Muriel had objected to it, of course. But there was no other alternative. Rents were sky high, and the house on Sycamore Road was the only answer. As they stand talking with Sabina in the front hallway, Muriel is a little impatient.
Well, that just about covers everything, Mrs. Fielding.
Yes, I think we'll make out very comfortably here.
It's hard to leave. Never thought I'd mind it this much.
Oh, of course.
It's been in the Fielding family for now. Let me see. Well, there was Rodney and Lisa. Yes, five generations.
Five generations?
Yes. Mm. I do hope you young people will be happy in it. A fine house in its time, you know. A proud house, just like the Fieldings. Yes, we're a proud family. None of us ever had money, excepting Richard, of course. That's my grandson. Richard had money, but it didn't do him any good. Well, even he's gone now. I'm the last now, the last Fielding. And I'm afraid I haven't much longer.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Mrs. Fielding.
Oh, no. I'm an old woman, Mr. Phillips. Yes, it's hard to leave. Oh, that clock. I can remember when my daddy bought it. Let me see now. Was that 68 or 69?
Mrs. Fielding, Harold will be glad to drive you into town.
68 or 69? Oh, yes. I'd better be going.
I'd be glad to take
you. Oh, well, it's only two blocks to the bus stop. I can still walk that far without any trouble.
I really think it'll be easier for you now, having just one room in town. You'll be closer to everything.
Yes, so I'm told.
Are you sure now? You don't want me to drive you?
Oh, you're very kind, and I do like to see that in young people. But I can manage, thank you. Well, goodbye, Mrs. Phillips.
Goodbye.
I know you'll be happy here.
I'm sure of it, Mrs. Fielding. Goodbye.
Goodbye, young man.
Young people, she said. We'll be very happy.
Shh, heaven's sakes, Muriel, she'll hear you.
I could scream my head off in here and she wouldn't hear me. Come to think of it, screaming wouldn't be a bad idea.
Will you quit it?
That old crone is probably laughing herself silly right now after palming off his old barn on us.
But, Muriel, you know as well as I do it's the best we can do right now.
Where have I heard that before? Well, I'm getting sick of it, Harold Phillips. I'm getting fed up with shabby substitutes.
Well, I've got a job. I don't know what else you want.
Classified advertisements on a stupid hometown paper. What kind of a job is that?
Well, it's the best I can do, and this house is the best I can do. You may as well make up your mind to it.
I know. I've been through all that before. But I'm not getting reconciled to it. You can make up your mind to that.
Anything else?
Yes, you. I can't say it's very inspiring, living in a moth-eaten shanty with an ink-stained nobody.
Muriel.
And this flock of antiques. That old clock she's so proud of. Listen to it. If you think I'm going to sit here day after day with that thing ticking in my ears...
What's got into you anyway?
I'm fed up, that's what.
Now what are you doing?
I'm going to stop this clock. Any objection?
Will you be reasonable?
Will you shut up? Where's the catch on this thing?
Oh, look out, you'll knock it over.
All right, so I'll knock it over.
Oh, now look what you've done.
Harold.
If you hadn't lost your temper again.
Harold, look.
Why, in the world?
Look at all that money. Just look at it.
Stuffed away in back of the clock.
Hundreds, thousands. Harold. Oh, Harold, darling.
As you sit listening on Monday nights to Signal Oil Company's program, The Whistler, has it ever occurred to you how many millions of persons around the world have never even heard a radio? Missing a lot of pleasure, aren't they? Oh, but wait a minute. Before you start shedding tears for those folks, just consider the pleasure you yourself may be missing if you haven't yet tried new Signal gasoline. No fooling, folks. You'll never know how much driving pleasure there's left in your car till you try Signal's new super fuel. For new Signal gasoline is packed with performance that's so apparent, you can actually feel it, see it, hear it. Now, here's what I mean. With new Signal gasoline in your car, when you touch the starter, you feel your motor spring instantly to life. When you step on the accelerator, you see your car step ahead with pickup that makes you proud. And even when your motor's working hard uphill, you hear it purr contentedly, proof of Signal's higher anti-knock. What's more, because you'll be shifting less, and shifting wastes gasoline, you'll enjoy more high gear miles, actually go farther than ever with new Signal gasoline. I know that's the kind of performance you'd like to enjoy from your car. And here's the easy way to get it. Just drive into one of the friendly stations displaying Signal's yellow and black circle sign and say, fill her up with new Signal gasoline. And now, back to the Whistler.
Almost like a dream, isn't it, Harold? You and Muriel, kneeling on the floor of Sabina Fielding's old house, literally surrounded with the money that spilled from the old clock. Muriel's in seventh heaven, as you counted. She even called you darling, didn't she? You work automatically, sorting the bills, 20s, 10s, 5s, into small, neat heaps on the scarred hardwood floor.
How much is it? How much altogether?
Wait, let me finish.
I simply can't believe it.
80,
it's like a dream.
100. There, that's the last 100.
How much altogether?
It hardly seems possible.
How much, Harold? Tell me.
$50,000.
Oh.
50,000 in currency, small bills. It's probably been hidden away in this compartment behind the clock for years.
$50,000.
I never thought I'd see this much money all at once.
The things we'll be able to do. All the marvelous things I've always dreamed of. All the clothes. Maybe go abroad. Who in the world? Harold, who can it be?
I don't know.
We can't let them in, all this money. We won't answer it. We won't let them in.
Well, we'll have to. They can see the lights are on.
But all this money.
Well, stay here and hide it. I'll see who it is.
All right, then. All right, but don't let them in. Nobody must see this money. Nobody must know we have it.
Yes?
Huh? Who are you?
Looking for someone?
I figured maybe the old lady fell asleep and couldn't hear me.
Old lady?
Sure, sure. The old girl, Mrs. Fielding.
Oh, well, Mrs. Fielding doesn't live in this house now.
Now, wait a second.
No, she doesn't live here now. She lives in town.
Who are you?
My wife and I are renting the house.
Who are you?
Well, I think you might do well to tell me who you are first.
Okay. I'll come in and we'll talk things over.
No, please. Wait a minute.
Now, listen, Jack.
Look. You see, my wife is very ill. We can't have any visitors.
I don't want to talk to your wife.
I can't talk to you now. I'm very busy. Good night.
Okay, mister. But I'll be back. So long.
Who was it, Harold? Harold? Who was it? What did he want?
Wait.
Well, why are you snooping from behind those curtains?
Well, I want to make sure that... Yeah, he's getting in his car. There he goes.
There who goes? Who was it, Harold?
A man. Oh, You set the clock up against the wall again?
Yes, the glass was broken. I threw the pieces in the fireplace.
Well, where's the money?
I put it back in the clock. Who was it?
Oh, I don't know. A fellow about my age had a red scar on his right cheek. He wanted to see Mrs. Fielding. He wouldn't give me his name.
It's funny.
He said he'd be back.
What are we going to do about the money? We can't leave it there. Maybe we could... Harold, what's the matter?
Hey, I think I know who he is. Muriel, what did Mrs. Fielding say about Richard Fielding? Something about money?
He's dead. She said she was the last, don't you remember?
I'm not so sure. That's the trouble. I'm not sure at all. Muriel, we may as well face it. It's not our money. It belongs to him.
Don't be stupid. He's dead and she doesn't know anything about it. We found it. It's ours. For the first time in our lives, we have a chance to get off the treadmill and get somewhere.
But it isn't ours. Besides, she needs it.
She's going to die. We've got a whole lifetime ahead of us.
I don't know, Muriel. What if it is his? What if he knows about it? We don't know for sure that he's dead.
We can find out for sure.
How?
Mrs. Fielding knows. We're going to call on her the first thing in the morning.
It's quite a problem, isn't it, Harold? You know it's wrong to take this money, but $50,000 is enough to set you staggering. Muriel didn't make that decision, did she? You would have made it all by yourself. Yes, Harold, there's only one thing that keeps you from taking it. The thought that someone else may be in on the secret. The man with a scar on his face, for example. You can't sleep all night thinking about him. Neither you nor Muriel stop for breakfast the next morning. At 9 o'clock, you're both talking to Sabina Fielding in her furnished room in town.
Sorry, I can't be a better hostess. Feeling mighty poorly.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Fielding. We just thought we'd drop by and see if you were settled yet.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. You're so kind. I'm really very happy you came. I don't get many visitors, you know. No one cares much about an old woman.
Of course, we don't want to tire you.
Oh, fiddlesticks. You're a little like part of the family now, living in my house. You do like my house, don't you?
Oh, we're in love with it, Mrs. Fielding. It's a lovely old place.
Oh, I'm so glad. You see, I didn't want it to go to anyone who wouldn't understand it. Houses are like people, you know. They have to be understood. Not everybody understands my house.
It certainly has atmosphere. That clock is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Oh, you like it? It's always been my favorite. I'm happy you like it. I guess you understand my clock, too. Richard always wanted it, but he didn't understand it, so I never gave it to him.
Why did he want it, Mrs. Fielding?
I never knew. Richard and I never got on together. Always said he had bad blood in him. Oh, he could have been such a nice boy. Handsome and strong. Until the accident, at least.
Accident?
Yes. He was never the same after the accident. He had it coming, though, Richard had. There was bad blood in him. I don't like to talk about my grandson.
Do you ever hear from him?
I don't want to talk any more about him. No, not anymore. Would you have some tea? It's a little early,
but... I wish you'd tell us about Richard. Have you any idea...
Muriel, I'm afraid Mrs. Fielding's tired. We'd better be going.
Oh, but I'm sorry to be this way. Now, perhaps some other time, when I'm feeling better.
Yes, of course. Yes. Come along, Muriel.
And that wraps up part one. We better get moving to part two because we got just enough time to wrap
it
up.
Let's do it.
That convinced you, didn't it, Harold? It all fits. The scar on the face of the man who called on you last night ties in with Sabina's story of Richard's accident. Her remark about his fondness for the clock. It was too easy, wasn't it? $50,000 isn't hidden in a clock and then forgotten. It's Richard's money, and he's bound to come back for it. There was no reason for tiring Sabina any longer. Muriel would have worn her out with questions. After all, Muriel isn't the kind who gives up easily. After you've arrived back at the house, she keeps it up, never letting down for a minute.
Harold, of all the asinine...
There was nothing else to do.
She would have told us if you hadn't... Sometimes I think you have the mentality of a child.
What more do you want? She practically came right out and said it. He had money. He was in an accident. The scar, you remember? He always wanted the old clock. Could she make it any plainer?
All right, all right. Jormu, what are you going to do?
We can't do anything. He knows the money's there.
What do you mean we can't do anything? We can leave, can't we?
When?
Right now.
Huh. That's a prize suggestion. Why, he could trace us in 5 minutes. We'd be in jail in a week.
Listen, Harold. You've got a chance. For the first time in your shabby, ordinary little life, you've got a chance at something real. Are you going to throw it away?
Well, I don't know.
Sabina knows nothing about the money, Harold. There are only three people in on it. You and I and Richard Fielding.
And he's coming back here. He said so.
You'll probably never have another chance, Harold.
What are you suggesting?
Think it over, Harold. There isn't much more time.
Yes, think it over, Harold. Is she right? You can see her point, can't you? You will never have another opportunity like this as long as you live. Just more of the same, day after day. Thousands more classified advertisements. Scrimping, pinching pennies, trying to make $5 do the work of 10. And only Richard Fielding stands between you and everything you ever wished for. Only Richard Fielding.
What's that?
Someone's at the door.
It's too late. He's come back.
Well, what are you waiting for? Let him in.
Huh?
He's getting impatient, Harold. Let him in.
But he's come for the money.
Why, Harold, what's the matter? You said it belonged to him.
I don't know, Muriel.
Nothing else we can do, is there? We can't take it. You said so. We'd be traced.
Oh, no, you're right. He can't take it away. It's the only chance we'll ever have.
There's no other way, Harold. Or is there?
Why, what do you mean, Muriel?
He might be difficult, Harold. There's the poker beside the fireplace.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
All right. Give the money back to him.
But it's mine. He can't.
Harold, get hold of yourself.
Muriel.
Harold, get the poker.
Yes, yes, Muriel. The poker. Yes?
Hi, I'm back again. You remember me, don't you? I was here the other night.
Sure, sure, I remember. What do you want?
I'd like to come in for a minute. My car's stalled outside.
All right, come in.
Yeah, I got this far from town, then my jalopy stopped dead on me. I didn't even know it was your house till I found myself on the steps again.
Well, come in the living room. I've been poking up the fire.
Yeah, I noticed.
Who is it, darling? Oh.
Hello.
Good evening.
What's the matter? What are you looking at? Didn't you ever see a scar on a man's face before, Mrs. Phillips?
How do you know my name?
I've been in town today asking a few questions.
He's the one, Harold. It's he.
Now, wait, Jack.
Now, Harold.
Wait!
The poker, Harold. Pick it up.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Pick the poker up. Put it back where it belongs.
I've killed him. I've killed a man.
Harold, stop it. Get control of yourself.
I'm going to be sick.
Stop it. I don't feel any better than you do, but it's done now. We've got to go through with it.
I've killed him.
Maybe you haven't. You better see.
Oh, no, I can't.
You've got to, Harold. Think of all that money. He's out of the way now. We don't have to worry. See if he's dead. Well?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Go through his pockets.
Oh, I can't.
You've got to. See if he had a gun. His identification.
There's an automatic and a shoulder holster.
You see? He would have killed us.
A wallet. $15 in it. That's all.
It has to be more than that. His identification.
Oh, there's nothing else in it, Muriel. Handkerchief in his pocket. There's nothing in this. Nothing here.
And that's all. Well, we've got to get rid of him.
Huh? Rid of him?
We can't leave him here. Take him out to his car.
It's stalled.
That was just an excuse to get in here. Where are those chains?
Chains?
The ones you had in the car, are they still there?
Oh, yes, I think so.
All right.
Weight his body down with them, and we'll drop him in the river. We can leave his car somewhere. He'll never trace him. No identification.
And then what?
And then we can take our own sweet time. You can give notice at the express in the morning, and we'll leave town in a couple of weeks. You can say you've got another job.
But the money.
Don't worry about it. There's no one left to talk, is there?
You've killed a man, Harold. It stopped you for a while, didn't it? But after that first wave of nauseating panic, you can think more clearly. The weighted body goes into the river, the car left on a lonely road. Then during the next few days, you try to appear normal at work while you wait for the news to break. It's hard to concentrate, isn't it? Mr. Gardner, your boss, has to call you on the carpet because of absent-minded errors you make in the daily classified section. The others notice you aren't eating at lunchtime. 5 days, 6 days, a week. Nothing happens. They must have found the car. They couldn't miss it parked down the highway 10 miles. Finally, you deliberately stroll into the city hall and look up Chief of Police Norton.
Well, hello, Harold. Sit down, have a chair.
Thank
Where
you.
Have you been keeping yourself? Missed you at the lodge meeting the other night.
Oh, I've been pretty busy. How about you?
Never a dull moment around here. You know, police work's funny.
Yeah?
Sometimes it gets so quiet you can hardly stand it. Have trouble keeping the men in line. I can hardly blame them playing around with traffic violations day after day. Men, all of a sudden, everyone gets so darn busy he wishes he had six hands. Yeah, look, like now, for instance.
You got a handful, huh?
Uh-huh. This is a quiet town, Harold. Too quiet sometimes, almost like a snake coiling up ready to strike. Last week, nothing but traffic violations. Well, maybe a bunch of wild kids breaking a store window somewhere. This week, stolen automobile.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Just gave the story to one of your boys. That isn't all. We got a murderer on our hands.
Huh?
Uh-huh. Somebody right in town, too. Just like I was saying, Harold, it's a quiet old burg, but I suppose as long as people get together, there'll be murder. Hmm?
Yes. Well, what was it?
Just like all those nosy newspaper guys, aren't you? Sorry, Harold. We can't say anything until we get him.
You, got any leads?
Sure. There's always leads. Don't worry. We'll get him. When we do, you'll know about it. Oh, excuse me. Norton speaking. Yeah. Fielding? When'd you find the body? Oh, gosh, that's tough. Huh? Well, yeah, Harold's right here. Just happened in. What's it got to do with him? What? Well, that's a funny one. Wait a minute. I'll get Phillips. Say, Harold, what did... Hello? He just ducked out the door. I'll get hold of him for you.
Muriel!
Harold, what on earth? What's wrong?
Don't ask questions. We've got to get out of here.
What's happened?
Norton's found out about Fielding. They found the body.
What?
Hurry. We've got to get away from here before he comes out here.
Too late to run.
Get the money.
Isn't any use, Harold.
Why not?
If they found the body, they're sure to catch you. You can't hope to get away by running.
Me? What do you mean, me?
I'm not running away, Harold.
You're an accomplice.
You think so?
Well, you're just as guilty as I am. Why, if you hadn't been so...
Oh, no, you don't. It's your word against mine. I had nothing to do with it.
You had everything to do with it.
I told you I was tired of being married to a failure. You failed again, Harold. You even failed at murder.
You won't get away with it. What about the money?
What money?
In the clock, the clock!
I didn't know there was any money in the clock. And I'm sure no one will find any there, even if you tell them to look in it.
You've hidden it. You've hidden that money somewhere else.
Have I, darling?
You're going to take it all for yourself when you're rid of me. That's why you said there was no hurry. You planned it this way, didn't you?
Perhaps.
Well, you won't get away with it, Muriel. You won't.
I don't know how you can stop me at this point, darling. You see? That's Chief Norton at the door now. I watched him drive up outside while we were talking. Better let him in.
Oh, no. Not until I've taken care of you first.
No. Hal, no.
Oh, I didn't get rid of Fielding's gun, you see.
Hal, no. Please. Please, I didn't mean anything I said. Help!
Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, let's take a look at a few of the new post-war products we've all been waiting for. According to news releases, the first of the new nylon hosiery will be of pre-war quality. The first new automobiles will be 1942 models with improvements added. But when it comes to gasoline, new Signal gasoline, that's another story. For new Signal is not just pre-war quality gasoline, not just old-style gasoline improved, but an entirely new type of motor fuel with performance features that until recently were reserved for war. You see, science has long known that gasoline is composed of molecules, and each molecule is an arrangement of atoms. The way those atoms are arranged determines how much power you get from the gasoline. Well, in old-style gasolines, the molecules were left just as nature made them. But recently, certain chemists found out how to take gasoline molecules apart, then rearrange the atoms in an entirely new way. The result is new Signal, an entirely new type super fuel with quicker starting, faster pickup, higher anti-knock, and longer mileage. Because these are all features you can actually feel, see, and hear, we urge you to let just one tank full of new Signal gasoline talk for itself. Let its performance in your own car show you why new Signal actually is the new post-war gasoline you can prove is superior. And now, back to the Whistler.
It was too late to do anything else, wasn't it, Harold? Too late to do anything but get even. And you did it very efficiently. Muriel, your wife, she's dead now, lying at your feet, as Chief Norton comes into the room.
Harold, what got into you? You've killed her deliberately.
It doesn't matter.
Good Lord, man, what are you talking about? You've committed a murder. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
She was as guilty as I am. She was in on it, too, understand? She wanted the money, the $50,000. She wouldn't give me any peace. When Fielding came back for his money...
Fielding? What Fielding?
Richard. It was his money in the clock. She made me kill him, Norton. She made me.
He came to the house for the money?
Yes.
He had a scar on his right cheek?
Yes, of course he did. Oh, will you drop it? I've had enough.
Wait a minute. You've made an awful mistake, Harold.
What?
The man you killed was the murderer I told you we were looking for. He was Richard Fielding's partner in a bank robbery last year.
Murderer?
Yes. They quarreled over the money, and he killed Fielding. When he broke out of the pen last week, they notified us, figuring he'd check in here sooner or later.
Yes, but down at your office, what were you talking about on the telephone?
Sabina Fielding. She died last night.
Sabina?
Yes.
But I thought...
Funny. I've always thought Sabina was a pretty good judge of character. She sure missed the boat this time.
What do you mean?
She must have taken a fancy to you and your wife. Left the house and everything in it to the two of you.
That's right. We're going to end it just there, so we have just enough time to hurry up and do this. Treehouse Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story as written by Gar himself.
They say that time is money, but hiding money in a clock, that's just crazy.
Okay.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
And what they're going to speak about is tomorrow night's drive-in feature, The Big Clock, from Lux Radio Theater.
True.
There you go. That's tomorrow. We'll see you then, 6:30 Eastern. Ta-ta-ta-ta.
Tick-tock.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
And go.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Ow. He slammed the door right on me. On me.
Ooh, rude.
Well, Vince must have been in a hurry to get home, you know.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Being a gourmand, he's got a brisket he's working on.
A brisket, a tasket. Never mind. There. I have updated my calendar now. Dave just sent us a new calendar not long ago.
Oh, yeah.
Goes all the way through December, into December. Yep. So all of November is scheduled. But always in case of ghosts. Ghosts or ghouls. Yes, ghouls too.
Why not?
Well, finally, finally found a way to, I don't know, the network was hopping all the way up and down, down and up and down. Maybe there were too many people on the network that I was on.
Maybe.
Oh. I had to find a different network. Yeah.
There you go.
Which
much better now. Much better now.
Oh, thank you.
Crystal clear.
Thank you so much. I'm sure the National Guard Armory won't mind me hopping on their signal occasionally.
That's right.
Hey, they're not using it tonight. What the heck?
Nah, they're not using it. It's bowling night, so they're out doing something useful.
I suppose I can say this now, but that was in the National Guard. We had to guard the Cuban refugees, and on the way there, we drove a convoy of Jeeps. Well, this was 1981, I want to say, during the Cuban refugee crisis. And over the military radios, I was playing Pink Floyd, The Wall, like all those war sound effects and stuff. And nobody knew where it was coming from. They just knew one of us was doing it. What are you guys, whoever's doing that, knock it off.
Couldn't have been tails.
Oh, I wasn't the only goofball.
No.
This one guy had a gag cigar. It was like a mile long. And he's smoking it while we're passing like regular people. They're like pointing and going, what the hell? Yes, we're here to defend your country, comically or otherwise.
So say the secret word and you get a prize.
That's right. They figure, away, you get $100.
Yep.
If you don't say the secret word, you owe me $100.
I don't know. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Someone was with a gag cigar. Someone was alternating signals on the radio and whatnot. Now everyone is saying, hang on, just hang on. I'll be there in a second. I just got to get this TikTok done. And then I got to go on my Instagram and going to go on my former Twitter and get on my Reddit and let me
formerly
get my Discord
known
done.
As.
And I'll be formerly known as.
Yes.
Then I got to answer my email. Then I got to text. But just hold the training. I'll be right there. Won't be a minute.
Yeah.
Getting someone's device away from them while you're trying to train them, I don't know how they do it. I mean, they must go into withdrawal.
They should have started in school. What you need is a school full of nuns with rulers. You would have you would have no cell phones during class. That's where it starts,
the illustrious
man.
Sister. Oh, yes. Mother Superior Knuckle Buster.
Yep. Sister Mary Bloody Knuckles. That's who we need.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there she is. Oh, yes, there she is coming down, floating on this effervescent cloud of anger.
Yes, righteous
that,
anger. Righteous
oh,
anger.
Righteous anger.
Yes.
Oh, with that oak wooden yardstick. Not a ruler, but a yardstick, I believe.
Yes.
We're going old school here.
That's right. If you're going to give a beating, do it right. Jeez.
<Yeah.
That's> horrible.
None of that plastic. Oh, no. It's good old-fashioned
yeah.
oak.
That's right. We're not fooling around with that plastic at all.
Gentlemen, I must be away. Fun time, as always. And I'll fulfill my final duty of the evening.
then we can all clock out. Ha, ha.
There we go.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So
we might as well clock out
with Mrs. Calabash's favorite person, Mr. Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
And say good night. Good night. What more is this say but good night?
Silly day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and it could think it do. Good night.
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 Night already.
Yes.
Cheese
and crackers.
No, it's
and
already
good
gone.
This is Calabash. Where evidence?
Oh, Jesus, old Fort Niagara.
Oh, jeez. There we go. We'll go the long way out.
Join us next week at this same time when the control voice takes you to the eerie limits.
That's creepy.
Here we go.
Please stand by.
We will control the squiggly lines.
Oh, this is the long goodbye.
Yep. Punishment.
Very philharmonic. Mm-hmm. Didn't take this long to read War and Peace.